from KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, Maury Sendak, author of Where the Wild Things Are, once said, kids don't know about bestsellers. They go for what they enjoy.
Hi, I'm Chloe. I'm 9 years old. My favorite book is The Mysterious Benedict Society, and I like it because it's very adventurous and it's never stopped being suspenseful.
Well, we'll discuss what new books kids are enjoying and what classic books still endure, what kids' books are popular in your house, and what children's books make good gifts. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Hi, my name is Grace. I'm fourth grade and I'm 9 years old. And one of my favorite Christmas books are The Snowman at Christmas. And I like it because it's snowmans that come to life and they kind of have their own party on Christmas Eve.
Hi, I'm Michael and fifth grade, I'm 11 years old, and there is a book called Wonder by R.J. Palacio. It's about a boy who has a face that's not as normal as other people's, and it's about his life with a different face.
My name is Lena, and I'm 6 years old. One of my favorite books is Everything on It by Shel Silverstein, and I want to read one of the poems to you. It's called Riddle. Listen to my song. I'm the strongest of the strong. I can make a giant cry. Who or what am I? The answer is an onion.
My name is Akira. I'm 4 and a half, and I like whales and dolphins books. Because I don't know. Happy holidays.
Well, those are our children book reviewers, as you can plainly tell. And those of you who are regular Forum listeners know we like to take a couple of times each year to get book recommendations from listeners and to talk about what books would make great gifts and what books are must-reads and everything. And we realize we've been ignoring children. We've been talking mainly about adult books all this time. And as we approach the holiday season, we thought it would be really both enlightening and useful for many of you who have kids or grandkids or, for that matter, who have children that you're fond of and looking for books, to give you some ideas about what to read and what to buy for kids. Let me tell you who's joining us this hour. Here in studio, Lewin Pham is a children's book illustrator. She's illustrated a number of books, including Grace for President and Freckle-Faced Strawberry and Alvin Ho, Allergic to Camping, Hiking, and Other Natural Disasters. And glad to have you on Forum. Good morning.
Thank you.
Also glad to have Lauren Savage, who's here in studio with us. She's the owner of The Reading Bug. It's a children's bookstore and event space in San Carlos. And they also blog about kids' books at readingbugblog.wordpress.com. Welcome.
Thank you.
Amy Martin is here with us in studio as well. She's a children's collection librarian at the Oakland Public Library. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to have you all with us. And Amy Martin, I thought I'd just begin with you, if I may. And because as a librarian, you're doing a lot, spending a lot of your time looking for children's books. But this,
oh yes,
this goes from like zero to age 14.
And we do, yeah. For Oakland Public Library, we collect from zero to age 14 within Children's Services.
So you're sort of like a, if this is a good analogy or not, I'm not sure, but like a baseball scout. You're looking for talent and you're looking in all kinds of places,
absolutely,
wherever that talent may be.
Yeah? Oh yes, oh yes, yeah. I started this year a subscription to The New Yorker because that's where a lot of emerging illustrators come from. So yeah, I have my ear to the ground.
And what are you looking for when you're looking for books that kids are going to love? I mean, you have a Geiger counter inside of you that knows what kids will love. What are the criteria of it?
I think that's kind of a good way to think about it, is sort of an internal monitor that you have. And a lot of it is reading, but a lot of it is also looking at the images. I've studied some of the Walt Stanfield lectures from the Disney Master Classes, and he talks a lot about appeal and what creates appeal in a visual, in a cartoon, in animation, and a lot of it is the same sort of thing that applies to children's books. In the writing, I spend a lot of time looking for what we call this emotional core and something that is resonance.
You're also looking for, is it fair to say, authenticity?
Absolutely, yes. Authenticity of voice, authenticity of character, authenticity of setting, yeah.
And what about, you know, a lot of children's books now have a certain agenda. I mean, whatever that agenda might be, they want to teach kids about all sorts of social and political things, especially at a certain age.
Oh, you're so right. Yes. And that's always been the case with children's literature. And in fact, we've come a long way from the really didactic early 20th century, late 19th century children's books that were simply moral instruction. You don't see so much of that these days, but really the weaker children's books that I see are the ones that you can smell the agenda when you look at it.
I like to often quote the great Roman literary genius Horace, who said the purpose of literature is to please or entertain and to teach. But you're not looking for the teaching that much, are you? You're looking more for the entertaining?
You know, I think some of the best books weave that teaching in very seamlessly. We do like – so with a children's book, the audience, the reader, is a child. The creator of the book most of the time is an adult. And we do have lessons that we can share. But the best children's books make it sort of subtle. And there's a way that they're incorporated into the text so that the lesson doesn't stand out as the purpose of the book.
And Amy Martin here in studio with us. And Lewin, let me go to you. When I hear Amy talk about the importance of visual, and you're an illustrator, I mean, we're seeing more and more graphic novels for kids, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. I think graphic novels is actually I wouldn't even say it's not a new genre exactly, but it's a genre that's sort of been reborn in the past few years. I think educators are seeing it in a different way. And for me personally, I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I'm noticing their gradation, their growth as they learn to read. And I'm discovering that graphic novels is a great way to introduce maybe hesitant readers to reading, because they're able to follow visually along where they wouldn't be able to follow the words necessarily. My 4-year-old can't read at all, and yet he'll wake up a Saturday morning and drag open a copy of Sardine by Emmanuel Guibert and Joan Safar and just sit there and pour through the pages and catch details that I would never catch. And for me, I know that that's laying in place the foundation to make him a really strong reader. And of course, he watches his older brother, who adores comic books, and the transition between comic books, where the stories might be more complicated, but visually, the visuals are able to sustain the story, allows you to move on to more complicated stories as a graded reader. So now in second grade, he's able to read a lot more complicated stories simply because he was introduced to more complicated plot lines in graphic novels.
And how many of these are the old traditional heroic figures?
You know, when I say graphic novels, I think a lot of people have the wrong perception. They think of comic books. They think of Superman. And although a lot of them sort of enter in that platform, it doesn't stay that way. There's a series now, I think it's called Astronaut Academy, where it's the concept is there's a little boy and he goes to academy school, and on the front cover it looks like he's very much a superhero, but it's not superhero genre. They're actually very real stories for kids that come cloaked in action and suspense and funniness and humor, but when it translates to an actual story. And so, you know, you've got the Smurfs and you've got like a lot of the European comic books that transcend over. But there's just a huge number of new graphic novels that are out there that are just a great way to introduce kids to books.
But generally, introducing kids to books involves getting them engaged, making them care about the story, igniting something in them, I mean, that will make them want to sustain or be, if they're reluctant readers, more inclined to read and so forth and so on. So has to be a kind of stake in the story usually for a kid, doesn't there? An emotional stake?
There's absolutely an emotional stake, yeah. And I'm sure if you were to pick up any graphic novel or any book, what am I saying, and start to read through it, you'll see, I mean, I use my two sons as tests, as guinea pigs all the time. You can see when it starts to peter out. If the book is purely a gimmick, in other words, it's a single joke that just sustains to the end, it's fun and it entertains them, but it results in a single read, maybe. If there's something in there with real heart, if there's a character that they become emotionally invested in, if they're concerned about the welfare of that character in some way, they'll sustain. They'll continue. They'll want to read more books about it. I think the Mo Willems series, Piggy and Elephant, is really good for that, where you've got two characters that are they're just comedic, almost Charlie Chaplin-like characters. When they go on there, they do a lot of their emotion is told through their visuals, and these are really simple introductory readers for kids. But the kids love them, and both characters, as simply as they're drawn,
are so emotionally developed. You can tell that the elephant is this sort of neurotic character that just needs to be comforted all the time. It doesn't like change. And then you've got his friend, Little Piggy, who she's more apt to change and to being different and to being funny. And those two characters work so well together that my sons feel like they're their friends. And when they read the books, they already know who they are. So the emotional investment is already there.
Yeah, they can identify with those emotions.
Absolutely.
And so forth. Of course, I look at kids' books sometimes and I see a lot of things about, like, burping and flatulence and things like kids like that kind of, especially boys,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah. But you know, I kind of do too sometimes. I have to admit, when I'm reading a book out loud to kids, and that's a barometer I use, is reading books aloud, is how much fun do you have reading it? And sometimes I have to admit, adding a little burp in there is funny. There's what is it, the new book by BJ Novak called The Book with No Pictures, which is
I keep hearing about that book.
Yeah.
He's a guy from The Office.
Yeah. He's the guy from The Office, and he's going to put me out of business because he's suggesting that you can do picture books for kids with no pictures. And
I told my friend who's on the Caldecott committee that she should really look at it. That's the award for illustration.
Don't do that. You're putting me out of job.
I know. I'm sorry.
Lewin Pham, again, is a children's book illustrator and has illustrated a number of books, including Grace for President and Freckle-Faced Strawberry and Alvin Ho, Allergic to Camping, Hiking, and Other Natural Disasters. Amy Martin is children's collection librarian at the Oakland Public Library. And Lauren Savage is also with us. She's the owner of The Reading Bug, which is a children's bookstore and event space in San Carlos. And they also blog about kids' books at readingbugblog.wordpress.com. Kids like bugs, too. Lauren, I'm struck by something. I know you started this bookstore of yours, I guess, about your kids were 3 and 6. It was about 5 years ago. Your kids are 3 and 6 now. It was about 5 years ago when your first daughter was born.
Yes.
And it almost sounds like the setup for a joke. Your mother-in-law and you went into business together.
We did. It works out quite well. my mother-in-law's dream was always to have a children's bookstore. I always wanted a retail store. She was our big investor in our independent independent bookstore in San Carlos. And she and I basically hit the ground running. I didn't know a ton about children's books. It was a massive learning curve, but had so much fun because I wanted to learn more about it for my children, and what a great place to grow up in a children's bookstore.
Could I just get a little bit of more information from you on something, Lewin, because there's actually already curiosity about how a book with no pictures is called No Pictures is Successful.
Wow. Well, I can only use my own kids as an example. What he manages to do is he manages to create a joke, like it's breaking the fourth wall, of course, and he manages to sort of create intrigue between the reader and the narrator and the reader. So my sons feel like they're in on the joke. And the whole premise of the book is that this narrator of the book suggests that whoever is reading the book, most likely the parent, is forced to say everything that's in the book. And as a result, he has to say things like blueberry pancake brain or monkey butt or really silly things like that. And of course, your child is just going to love hearing you say these silly things that you are forced to read because it's the premises in the book. And I kind of liken this book. I consider it this book and books like Mix It Up by Hervé Toulet and
Press Here,
sort of the anti-iPad books. They're books that suggest that you're sort of competing against the iPad and other digital forms of entertainment constantly with your kids. And when you're finally given a book where the book itself is an object of play, that's great for kids. And the book with no pictures does that. It suggests that as you turn the pages, you're in on the joke and the kids get to feel like they're controlling their environment in some way. In the same way as the book I was mentioning before, Press Here, it's a great book. It's definitely the anti-iPad where you've got a book and the images are really simple. There's a dot on one page and the text just says, press here. You press the next page and the dot turns to a different color. And, oh, let's see what happens if you press here. And you see the kid manipulating the pages of the book in a way that you would see them manipulating an iPad, but it's a book and it's very heartening for that. And I feel like there's a whole genre of books that are coming out in that way that are suggesting that, hey, there's value in the turning of the pages of this particular book. And I love that. I'm constantly
looking. Not just a screen.
Not just a screen.
And Lauren, when people come into your bookstore, I mean, you're there to guide them in many respects. What kind of questions do they ask? And what are they looking for?
They're looking for something their child can relate to. And I think actually the part of the book with no pictures that I think works very well is that it's a fantastic read aloud. Mm-hmm. And the way you read to your child makes that book even better. Mm-hmm. And that's something actually I spend a lot of time teaching in our story times that we do every day. The way I read something will actually sell the book to the parent because they go home and mimic that or create their own characters with the book. And that gets their child excited about mm-hmm. reading.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment. I mean, reading aloud can be an extraordinary positive thing where children are concerned.
Yes. Yeah. I always use this story because my husband was read aloud to by my mother-in-law until he was 16 years old. And that doesn't happen a lot these days. And I think it's so important. I think you get different things out of the book by being read aloud to. My daughter, who's six, who's just learning to read, it's great that she can now read on her own. And it's so exciting to hear her. But the comprehension isn't there yet. Mm-hmm. So when it's read to you, you seem to comprehend a little bit more.
But you can also give it a lot of – I mean, I used to read to my kids, one of them is in the control room now, you know, using inflections and using energy and excitement and enthusiasm and all those kinds of things, and hopefully maybe even a little histrionics, you know,
exactly.
When it's appropriate. Let's actually hear some more kids who are giving recommendations for books. Danny?
Hi, I'm Henry from San Francisco, and I'm 12 years old. My favorite series of all time is the Skullduggery Pleasant series by Derek Landy. I really like it because it has magic in it, and I've always been interested in magic myself, and it makes me wish that I could have magic.
My name is Violet, and I love the book Where the Wild Things Are.
Why do you like it?
Because the monsters and with the wild things.
My favorite book in it is the one where Joseph gets lifted into the jail and where he goes to the doctor.
Why?
Because. Just is.
All right, we're going to get some recommendations from our panelists here, but let me also invite those of you listening. If you found a book that was particularly enhancing to your child or a child that you know or a book that you particularly loved as a child, we'd like to hear from you. I mean, this is like what we do a couple times a year with adult books, but we really want to hear about books that are cherished and books that are important to you that are for children and that you think are wonderful for children. And in fact, let me invite you to join us now. Our toll-free number is available, and you can call us at that number. It's 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program and let us know of a particular children's book that either your kid, your grandkid, or your nephew, niece, whatever, or you loved as a child. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page, and we'll bring you into this in just a moment. But I thought we'd begin maybe by getting some recommendations from our esteemed panelists here. Lauren Savage, give us maybe a book of, can we go 0 to 5 and then go 5 to 10?
Sure. So 0 to 5, one of my favorites is Superworm this year. It's by Julia Donaldson. And she's the author of The Gruffalo and The Spiffiest Giant and a number of other wonderful children's books. Superworm is all in rhyme. Rhyming text to me is something very important, especially for the younger set, because they can kind of understand what might be coming next and start using those rhyming words themselves. It also has a chant throughout, which I like, which leads us back to kind of the idea of a read aloud, and the kids can read aloud the chant with you throughout and do movements as well with the book. So that's a great one for maybe even baby to six. For our early readers, which we call our ages 6 to 8, Princess in Black, which is actually one that that Lewin wrote, illustrated. And princess, the word princess, we all think, oh, another princess book, another pink book. It's not what it is. The Princess in Black, obviously, she wears black, too.
You know, Peggy Ornstein wrote a whole book about all this princess stuff.
Yes.
And how it sort of infected kids.
And, yes, and I'm okay with the princess idea. And we have a whole section, in fact, in our store that's called Princesses and Fairies. And Princess in Black sits there, too. Princesses can be prim, they can be proper, they can be pink, but also they can go and save the day and run and jump and wear all black like a superhero. superhero.
Yeah, all these strong young girls now in books. I love it.
Exactly. And finally, for middle grade, for ages 9 to 12, I have Rain Rain by Anna Martin, who, if some of you out there remember The Babysitter's Club, that's the series that I grew up with. She's also recently written the series The Doll People and just came out with Rain Rain the last few months. And Rain Rain is a homonym. R-A-I-N and then R-E-I-G-N. And the lead character is obsessed with homonyms. She's a high-functioning autistic girl who's in fifth grade, and she, which is also known as Asperger's. And that's the start of the story. And she loses her dog named Rain. And she has to find Rain and get out of her daily routines and everything that she knows to save her dog.
Well, what a good way to get kids to learn about Asperger's, for that matter. We're getting some recommendations from our listeners. Let me just read some of these. And if you're familiar with them, pipe in here and let us know your thoughts. Susan writes, Starfire and the Pet Washer by Jennifer Alvarez, imaginative stories kids love to read. Michelle says, The Watermelon Seed by Greg Pizzoli makes my three-year-old daughter laugh hysterically every time. Jessica recommends The Good Dog by Todd Kessler, and Kate says The Day the Crayons Quit. That's a famous one, isn't it?
The Day the Crayons Quit is great.
Yeah, what's great about it?
The crayons revolt against their colorer, for lack of a better word. Duncan is the main character, and he gets all these letters from his crayons, and they're frustrated with being used too much. Like, red is always used to color everything in that's holiday. He always has to color in hearts for Valentine's Day. He always has to color in the Santa Clauses, and he's tired. And one of my favorites is Peach Crayon. Peach Crayon.
You know?
Yes, go ahead. You talk about Peach Crayon, Amy.
Peach Crayon started that book on the road to controversy in the library world because the crayon that was shown unwrapped without his clothing.
Yes.
I don't remember if it was referred to as flesh tone, but he was that sort of peach color.
Yes.
And this one of your favorites too, Amy?
It's not. No, it's not. The illustrator, I think, is a rising star. He's
Oliver
wonderful.
Jeffers, yes.
And he has an amazing new book that's coming out soon. But that book, it's problematic because the skin tone of the crayon that's said is skin tone is this peach color. And the implication is that skin is peach colored. Yeah. So that's why librarians reacted pretty strongly against that.
Chauvinistically Caucasian or something along those lines, maybe. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. You want to recommend something, Amy?
Or? I would love to. So if I start with the very youngest kids, Lewin has already mentioned Hervé Tulle's Press Here. I've read that book to toddlers and 10-year-olds, and it's universally a crowd pleaser. It's just adored. Kids really love that book. There's a wonderful series, or there's a couple of new books in this series of board books. The writer is Stephen Krensky. There's one called I Am So Brave and another called I Know a Lot. I can't remember the illustrator, but they're fantastically done.
Do you have time to read adult fiction at all?
No.
Who has time for that?
Oh, there's a lament. Yeah, who has time for that? We're going to take calls. We've got all kinds of recommendations coming in, and you can let yours be heard by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. We'll continue with Lewin Pham, Lauren Savage, and Amy Martin, and you when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and if you've just joined us, we're looking for a good book or books for your children or your friends' children, and if you know of one, please let us know what it is. We're checking in with a panel of experts on the best page-turners for the young literary crowd, and by that I mean from 0 to 14, and with us in studio is Amy Martin, who's children's collection librarian for the Oakland Public Library, and Lauren Savage, who owns The Reading Bug, along with her mother-in-law, and Lewin Pham, who is a children's book author and illustrator and has illustrated many books and actually sent us a list. And by the way, let me make an announcement here. There is a video on our website, and you can actually, and in fact, I would encourage you to go and see it. It's kids talking about their favorite books at the bookstore, The Reading Bug, kqed.org/forum. It's kind of fun to go and see these kids talking. We've heard some of them over the course of this hour reviewing, but you can actually see these kids, and I hope you would enjoy that. We asked Lewin before she came on the air to recommend some books, and I'm reading her email here. It says, holy cow, my list could go on. I'll mention lots of classic books during the show, so I'll stick to just the new books on this list. What would... could just ask you, what classic books would you mention?
Oh, God. All right. So one of my favorites as a kid was The Westing Game. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what's become of that. I know it's still in print, but that is one of those great puzzle books where it's a classic sort of Agatha Christie setting. There's a huge house. There are 12 members of reading of a will. There's a dead body. There's trying to figure out who it was that killed who. And there's clever
words. It's for somewhat older kids, though. You
it's
know?
For who were like 12, 9, yeah. 11. Or actually,
mystery
no, I think
stuff.
I read it when I was 9 or 10, actually. But it's one of those books when, as a kid, I read it and it just hooked me onto mysteries and it hooked me onto trying to parse out the meaning of really simple words. And it's a great book. That's by Ellen Raskin.
Oh, I know Ellen Raskin. I read a book when I was 9 years old called Homer Price. Do you know that book?
It's kind
of a classic, yeah. and really a mm-hmm. delightful book, as I remember. I went back and looked at it when my kids were about that age. More listener suggestions are coming in. Ingrid writes, I've been lucky enough to have my kids at Chabot Elementary in Oakland, where we have two amazing librarians. They shared the borrowed Hanukkah Latkes by Linda Glazer with us, and it has become an extremely lovely family favorite at holiday time. Todd Parr books and Skippy John Jones books also make great gifts. Joanna writes, my favorite book as a child was Katherine Patterson's Jacob, Have I Loved. It is so brilliantly written and insightful that it has spoken to me at every age from the time I first read it at the age of 10 to now. I haven't read it to my 6-year-old yet, but I can't wait to do that. And from our former intern, Megan, Drummer Hoff and the Rainbow Goblins are incredible, amazing illustrations. Jill suggests Seven Silly Eaters by... And Barnyard Dance, Lily in the Purple Plastic Purse. Eric recommends All at Home, and Nora recommends Miss Maple Seeds. These titles are familiar to our three experts here, I imagine, many of them. I'll look at your email again, Lily, because you went to the trouble to say, picture books, Bears See Escape, Weasels, and Press Here.
Oh, yeah.
Early chapter books, Origami Yoda series by Tom Engelberger, Stars Jedi Academy by Jeffrey Brown, and The Chicken Squad by Doreen Cronin, and chapter books, Princess Academy by Shannon Hale, The Ascendance Trilogy by Jennifer Nielsen, and The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. Anybody want to respond to these suggestions of your colleague here?
Yes.
Good. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. The Ascendance trilogy is fantastic, starting with The False Prince by Jennifer Nielsen. And I love this story because it unfolds. The reader doesn't know what's going on, but the character does, and it unfolds beautifully. He's a poor orphan boy, and turns out that he's actually a prince.
Well, this is like Twain's Prince and the Pauper almost,
yes,
isn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, kind of borrowing somewhat freely from Samuel Clemens.
A little bit, yeah.
Let's go to our callers, and we begin with Karen in Walnut Creek. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. I'm so thrilled you're doing this show. I just wanted to mention that we love Everything and Anything by Roald Dahl. I have a 5-year-old and a 9.5-year-old, and we read The Witches, The BFG, James and the Giant Peach over and over again, and they can't seem to get enough. I did have a question, though, which
should
was,
I be a party pooper here or something along those lines? No, I mean, I like Roald Dahl. I think he's a wonderful storyteller, but he was a dreadful human being. I mean, I don't know if we should keep those things separate or not.
Welcome to children's literature.
Keep them separate,
yeah,
really.
I mentioned Alice in Wonderland, you know, sometimes the authors are not who we'd like them to be, but their work can be incredible.
Well, thank you for those recommendations. And your kids are how old, Karen?
I have a 9.5-year-old and a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old now. And I actually had a question. My 9.5-year-old reads at a 10th grade level, which is wonderful, but we struggle to find books that are exciting and challenging and do not bring up material that emotionally a 9.5-year-old is not ready for. So I was wondering if your guest had any suggestions for me this holiday season.
Mm-hmm. That's a question we get a lot in the library, and we do a lot of reader's advisory for kids who are reading at a level that's really above their emotional development. Does your son like graphic novels?
He prefers things that are more in-depth, like medieval times, things that are science-related. So he tends to be gravitating towards big, dense books.
Well, he's probably read Tolkien then, hasn't he? Or has he?
He has, yes.
So it sounds to me like maybe something in nonfiction might be of interest. I see that as a trend now. People really are loving nonfiction. One of the ones that I actually read myself last week was called Toys, and it's the story behind the invention of great toys like Lego and Raggedy Ann and Mr. Potato Head. And they're short stories, but they're very interesting. And things along that line also in science. I mean, there's fantastic nonfiction science books out there.
What about biographies? We used to read them. I used to gobble them up as a kid. Yes. Along with classic comic books, of course. But
So right now I'm reading The Family Romanoff by Candace Fleming. This is one that actually your son might be interested in also. It's about the Romanoffs and the fall of the Russian Empire. And it is a biography of Nicholas and Alexandra and Anastasia once she comes along, I'm sure. But it's also an exciting story and there's a lot of intrigue.
And not to push the graphic novels, but I would suggest if he is into sort of heavier materialist, not necessarily, he's not emotionally ready for some of it, you might want to try Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi or Mouse even by Arch Spiegelman, which introduces World War II and what happened, the atrocities of it. Mm-hmm. But they approach it in a way that's actually very, very approachable for most kids and for adults as well. So, it's definitely something for kids.
They are a little heavy.
Yeah. Spiegelman could be a little heavy for a kid of that age, but here's Amy. Amy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I want to thank you for this topic. I'm always struggling to find great books for my 8-year-old twin boys, and I just wanted to bring up two that I passed on to them. When I graduated from college, my mom and dad gave me a Dr. Seuss book, Oh, the Places You'll Go, and I've read this to my children, you know, from the very beginning, and now they're reading it to me, and I just think that it perpetuates through your whole life because there's always more places for you to go.
Yeah, how about Horton Hears a Who? I'm going to put a word
on that one.
Yeah.
The other book I wanted to bring up is I'll Love You Forever. It's a really touching story about a mommy who takes care of her son, and as she ages, he turns around and takes care of her. And I can't get through it without crying now that I have sons and I can see my
I have not met a parent who can talk about that book without tearing up. I haven't. And the funny thing about that book is the pictures are so creepy.
They are. They're really creepy.
But people just
tears me up. I can't get through it.
Well, I can't either.
But you're recommending it. Thank you. Speaking about things that are creepy, parents still have their kids read grim fairy tales, which are pretty grim, you know, and mutilating and all that kind of stuff. Just wondering.
I don't know that parents actually read the original Grimms to them so much. I tried reading it.
I wouldn't. I mean, seriously.
No.
I mean,
we don't see a lot of it, but there's plenty of children's literature that's pretty grim. There was a book, oh gosh, and I'm not able to remember the name. It came out maybe last year.
Not a Tale Dark and Grim, Adam Gidwitz.
Not a Tale Dark and Grim. It was
Which
for
is really
a slightly
great.
Older crowd. Yeah. Oh gosh, I'm challenging myself. It's based on a fairy tale, and it's a baker who bakes cakes, and they're poison.
Oh,
yeah,
I don't know this.
Very dark story.
You know, kids always seem to love. We were talking about poetry before. Shel Silverstein.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
Very entertaining. And let me get some more of our callers on here, and we'll go next to Elizabeth in Portola Valley. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, Elizabeth.
I am calling to tell you about this amazing book that I received from my now nine-year-old for about three, called Iggy Peck Architect. And I just wanted to read you the first four lines, which will pull any child in. It says, young Iggy Peck is an architect who has been since he was two, when he built a great tower in only an hour with nothing but diapers and glue. It's about a young boy who is born innately as a designer and architect, and he just does all these crazy things. And then he goes to school and has a teacher that tells him he can't look at architecture while he's in school. And then they go on a trip, and a bridge breaks, and he puts a bridge together with roll-ups and shoestrings and things that you can't mention, and there's a pair of, like, underwear hanging on the top of the bridge. It's hysterical, and it's just the cadence throughout the whole book. It's my favorite book to read.
Now, I'm so glad you mentioned that book, because how about Rosie Revere Engineer, which is the next
one? It doesn't have the same beat, you know, for me.
I agree with the beat.
I have two boys and a girl. We have both books, but I prefer this one.
Yes. The reason I like that one is it's engineering for girls, and it's a little bit different there. So it's got the aspect of really really talking to girls that they can do anything just like a boy can.
And Elizabeth, we thank you for that recommendation. I want to get as many of you on as I can here. Lots of people have recommendations, and Julie is next. Julie, join us. Hi,
good morning. I'm really enjoying this topic. Thanks for having me on. And I, Michael, you mentioned continuing to read to older children. I wanted to put in a word for being read to as an adult. I'm very fortunate that I have a variety of adults that read to me. I enjoy it immensely, and because I get to hear them, and they're much better than I am at reading out loud, I get to hear their intonations and use of pause. It gives me confidence to go and read to children after listening to them. So continue to be read to as an adult.
Okay. I thank you for that, and I'm going to read some of your emails. Michael writes, "My son loves Officer Buckle and Gloria. It's a great story about an officer and his safety tips and his new police dog who lives in up his safety tip demonstrations. Please keep reading this to him from 4 years old. He's now five." Here's Sarah, who writes, "Rosie Revere Engineer," about a little girl who wants to be an engineer. Is that the one you were
that's
talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. Here's Lacey, who said, "I loved as a child the Aulard's Book of Greek Mythology. As a college student, I introduced it to my friends who are having trouble in comparative mythology to become familiar with Greek mythology. It definitely helped."
We are still keeping that one on the shelf.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Greek mythology has been very popular lately.
I love mythology as a kid. I'm glad to hear that mm-hmm. kids are still reading mythology. Marcia writes, "My son loved the Brian Jakes Redwall series about seafaring mice. These are novel-length chapter books, as my son used to say, person-animal books," mom smile. "Also, the Anno books, a wonderful Japanese illustrator who created wordless narratives which follow the left-right convention in the way the books were read. Brilliant, and thanks for this great show." Thank you. Nicole says, "The Very Ugly Pumpkin by Dave Horowitz really helps children build empathy and understand we're all the same on the inside, good for 0 to 5 years old. The story unravels, and he actually is not a pumpkin and turns out to be a squash. Great to read during the holiday season. Enjoy." Let me read a few more listener recommendations. Alyssa tweets, "Pirates Don't Change Diapers" is a staple around here. Debbie says her favorites include The 14th Goldfish, set in the Bay Area, El Defo, and Brown Girl Dreaming, which is a national award winner.
Debbie has good taste.
Yes.
Gabriella recommends The Big Hungry Bear. And Lorraine writes Alphabet Soup by Kate Banks, The Frog and Toad series by Arnold Lobel, and Jessica suggests Al Moon, It's Beautiful. Let me go to more of your calls. We'll go next to Sacramento. Mark, hi.
Hi, just real quickly, these are books that I've loved and also I read to my son when he was very young. First of which is The Hobbit, and which is especially important in light of the horrible things that Peter Jackson is doing to the, the story. The Hobbit is such a beautiful story of, you know, a small person finding their courage. I think it's beautiful. And then these are probably out of fashion nowadays because it's a bit of the white man's burden and all that, but Rudyard Kipling's Mowgli stories, commonly known as the Jungle Books, I still find they're very beautiful, and they have a beautiful sort of inner morality and, I don't know, very lyrical. So,
you know, there's a story by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, a famous Colombian novelist, which is called A Very Old Man with Enormous Wings, and it was written as a children's tale. You know, you have these stories that become popular among adults but were written originally as children's books or for children. And they sort of cross over in that way. And, you know, it's what Sesame Street tried to do initially. You know, they wanted to be both for kids and for the adults and have all these in-jokes for the adults that they could recognize. Any of those books come to mind?
Well, resonant is resonant. And I think that what resonates with children is going to resonate with adults. And Maurice Sendak has that line about, "I don't write for children, I write." And someone says, "That's for children." Looking at picture books that kids love and adults love, a couple of my favorites from recent years. There's a team, Adam Rubin and Daniel Salmieri, are author-illustrator. They have titles including Dragons Love Tacos, Secret Pizza Party, and this year, Big Bad Bubble. Those books are hilarious. The pictures are so funny. And there's a lot of good in-jokes that I think adults will appreciate, too.
Good. And by the way, you can see these recommendations online by going to our website. You can also watch the video of kids making their recommendations. And let's hear from more of our listeners who have recommendations. Karen, hi.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me on the program, and I love this. And thank you, Lauren, for everything you do at The Reading Bug. This is Karen Benke. I wanted to recommend Cynthia Rylance's books. I absolutely love The Old Woman Who Names Things, the Henry and Mudge series, the Mr. Putter and Tabby series, and for the slightly older kid crowd, the Van Gogh Cafe and Gooseberry Park.
You're getting head nods here. You're getting good
support. She is a writer of such incredible breadth. She writes for every age, and she does it very well. And she has a series called Brownie and Pearl, which I really love. I think for you parents who are sick of reading those Dora books, Dora the Explorer books to your kids, go look for Brownie and Pearl. She looks similar enough that your kid might buy it, and they're so much shorter and sweeter.
Well, sometimes it's just important to get kids to read. My daughter is visiting here this hour and is reminding me of the fact that when she was, I guess, in about the sixth grade, they had these books called Sweet Valley Twins,
yes. Mm-hmm.
which I used to call Sweet Valley Twits. And they were, you know, all about, you know, cheerleaders and kind of silly stuff that you didn't necessarily want to get your kid thinking about. But the fact was, and there was a big controversy, should they read these? They're kind of, you know, dopey. Back then, you get the kids to read. I mean, that was a big argument for Harry Potter, right?
Oh, yeah. I read every single one of those Sweet Valley Twins. But you know what? I read other things, too. And it was a gateway to other books. I think you start people with what they love, start kids with what they really are interested in, and then try to expand their horizons from there, as long as they're reading.
More importantly, it's a gateway to itself. How many adults do you know who don't read? Mm-hmm. Probably a lot. Yeah. I think that if you get kids reading something they love, even if they don't ever try anything that's denser or greater literature, they're reading.
Majority of Americans don't read. Mm-hmm. I mean, truth be told.
Yeah.
I mean, well, they'll read things online or they'll read newspaper articles or magazines, but we're talking about different kind of reading.
Kids who are reading something and loving it are doing something right, and you're doing something right as their parent for helping them.
I think that's the lovely thing about a series, too, is that even no matter what the subject of the series is, so long as the child's able to identify it and be able to go to a bookstore and see a whole bunch of other books by that same author, by that same series, it harkens back to the idea that you get emotionally invested in certain characters and you want to follow those characters.
Yeah.
And Harry Potter was great for that, and it just brought on a whole slew of series of unfortunate events, and the Spiderwick Chronicles, all those just stemmed from the idea of investing in a character and growing with that character over time.
When I'm doing my cheerleading about literature and telling people how important it can be to their lives, I usually say, you know, it really enhances your empathy, and kids do learn empathy from stories. They do learn a great deal about empathy from stories, as well as how to relate to people, as well as how to solve problems.
I write my books to try to create give empathy to my children. I'll base my stories on my son's life and try to teach them a lesson.
Teach them to empathize with you as their mother?
In general. There's a book I just wrote called A Piece of Cake, and it's really about trading up. Mm-hmm. Not trading up, but your mouse trades for certain pieces of cakes.
Well, there are more recommendations coming in on social media. Let me just read some of these. Jennifer writes that her young adult favorites this year are Great by Sarah Benincasa and Noggin by John Corey Whaley. Gohar says The Lost Things by Sean Tan. Mary says Duck in a Truck, Stuck in the Muck, Goat in a Boat, Sheep in a Jeep, gaining more traction with my 12 to 14-year-olds these days. Denise tweets, My kids love Interrupting Chicken, Duck on a Bike, and The Elephant and Piggy series by Mo Willems.
Oh, yeah.
Mary writes, Buzzasterous Bop is so amazing to read out loud for younger kids. And we'll take more of your calls. We'll go to Union City. Donna, hi.
Hi. There's been some mention briefly about comic books, but I think I want to make a plug for Japanese comic books as well. My daughter is 5 years old, and she really, really loves the Yotsuba Ann series. It's about a five-year-old little girl in Japan just experiencing life. And, I've been reading it to her since she was, truth be told, we named her after the American translation of her name. And she's been reading it ever since she's been conscious of reading it. And
Donna, excuse me, is this part of the manga?
Yeah, manga, yeah.
Yeah, very popular.
Last night I put her to bed and I found no less than three of those comic books in her bed. And they're thick, they're detailed, and there's at least 12 volumes out that I'm aware of.
All right. Mm-hmm.
We buy a lot of manga in Oakland Public Library. There's another series called Cheese Sweet Home that you might like as well.
Cheese Sweet Home, what's that about?
It's about a kitten. It's a very young manga, so it's appropriate for younger kids to read.
And here are some more of our callers. Karen, good morning.
Hi. I wanted to put a plug in for a young reader book called You Read to Me, I'll Read to You.
Those are great.
It's sort of a twist on Mother Goose Tales, but people take turns reading, and you can do different voices with it. And when my daughter was younger, she just loved these books, and we could read them over and over again and never get tired of them, and add lots of silly voices. And there's a series by the same author, and they're just very clever. And I also want to put in a plug for The Reading Bug. It's such a gift to our community, and it's wonderful to see an independent bookstore do so well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Oh,
and one quick other thing.
Yes.
I have to say, my daughter's a little older now. She's in middle school, and I'm so done with the dystopian novels. And it's hard to find engaging books that are just about more real, true-to-life characters. But she loves anything by John Green. So that's been
Thank you, Karen. And on we go. Kate in San Rafael. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I have a 17-year-old daughter, and she loves to write. And her favorite thing to do is to write books for her little cousins. So what she does is she knows if it's Brazen she's writing for. She knows you love building sites. So she writes them a little tiny book. It takes about, I don't know, 45 minutes an hour. She illustrates her herself. And she's not a great artist. But those are my niece's and nephew's favorite books. They read them over and over again, even when they get older. And it's a simple story, but, you know, anybody can do that, and they love it.
Okay.
And that really speaks to that connection that becomes important when you have this a favorite book in your family. When it's a favorite book among the different members of your family, sometimes it'll be because a family member made it for you. That's very special. It's a big part of reading.
There's nothing better than kids reading to kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And writing for kids.
And writing for kids. Yeah.
And I thank Kate for her call. I want to go to more of your emails here. Here's Claire in Berkeley who writes, I'm an artist and children's book illustrator. Many years ago, I was approached by a publisher about illustrating a book based on a true story. The author had been a migrant farm worker as a child. It was a story of an incident in the camps where he and his family were working. I declined, having just illustrated something very similar. The publisher sent me a cassette tape of the author reading it, and before it was halfway done, I had tears rolling down my cheeks. It's called The Christmas Gift by Francisco Jimenez, who is currently a professor in Santa Clara. It's a beautiful story. It's bilingual in English and Spanish, a really lovely story, and I highly recommend it. My granddaughter, Susan writes, almost 4 years old, loves the Elephant and Piggy series by Mo Williams. And another listener, Joey, says Neighborhood Sharks by Catherine Roy. These are ringing bells.
Yes, we just met that author. She's fantastic.
She's great. She's local. It's new nonfiction. It is sharks. It's a little gory. But
well, kids love to read about not only sharks, but dinosaurs. I mean, you know, all these kind of scary.
That never changes.
David writes, the Choose Your Own Adventure series by Edward Packard. So much fun and imaginative. Reading one of these books is like playing a game. I love these books as a kid, and my daughter's now picking up these dog-eared paperbacks. Loie writes, I'm a resource specialist. Just finished my first children's reading book, The Adventures of Scout and Eddie. The rhyming words are color-coded, and there's a tagline on each page that the children can anticipate and read. Please remind your parents to point to the words as they read them. Best practice for kids learning to read. And I read with my dad every night and was reading The Wizard of Oz by the time I was six. Jennifer writes, my six-year-old son loves The Magic Treehouse by Mary Pope Osborne. Can your guests talk about other great series and also recommend books in Spanish?
Sure. I actually just went to the Spanish book fair in Guadalajara, Mexico, to buy Spanish books for OPL. Spanish publishing is very different from American publishing. You'll see a lot of translations of popular American titles into Spanish, but then you'll see these Spanish titles that are also from Central Latin America. Come to Oakland Library in about a month, and we'll show you everything we
the
got.
The fruits of your trip to Guadalajara. Melina tweets, yay, wrestling game. What about the Phantom Tollbooth? That's one the kids always have loved. My two-year-old, Carrie writes, is currently fixated on Julia's House for Lost Creatures by Ben Hatke. And Julia's House for Lost Creatures is a beautifully illustrated story of a little girl who invites lost trolls, dragons, mermaids, etc. to live in her house. Chaos ensues, and Julia must figure out how to get everyone to get along under one roof. Sharon in San Mateo says, my 10-year-old daughter has read the Harry Potter series repeatedly, especially books 3 and 4. We've tried the Percy Jackson series, but we're disappointed. We try to get her to read other books, Chronicles of Narnia, Lemony Snicket, etc. She loves listening to them, but always returns to rereading the Harry Potter books. Any recommendations for a book or author that she can find the same kind of magic?
Books by Pseudonymous Bosch. The name of this book is Secret Series. It's one of my favorites.
And I have adult colleagues who reread Harry Potter endlessly.
Rereading is great.
I listen to it all the time.
The audiobooks are fantastic. The person who, I think Jim Dale is the
mm-hmm. person who reads them. They're fantastic. Nothing wrong with rereading Harry Potter.
I'm reading them now to my son, and mm-hmm. he's only 7, and he's already completely hooked and just won't let me stop reading. And I don't even think he understands half the story, but mm-hmm. he just keeps going.
Yeah.
Let's get another caller on, and that's you, Samuel. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a first-time parent, and I have a 10-month-old. I wanted to ask, what special things I can do to encourage me into the reading? Never early to start.
What a great question.
Board books.
I love
just
it.
Just have books around everywhere.
Just treat them like toys. Yeah. Treat your board books like toys. Stack them up. Play with them. If she gets bored, she or he just walk away, try something different.
One of my tricks, if you're reading a story and your child doesn't seem interested, is to sing a song right in the middle of the book. Yep. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're reading something long and you want to get through it, just stop. Sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. It gets them reengaged right away. Mm-hmm. I do that at story times
all the time. The earlier you start reading books to kids, the more they associate it with spending time with you and with being safe and feeling happy. Mm-hmm. And just as soon as they're born, I think mm-hmm. my kids were surrounded, literally surrounded by books constantly, and slept on them and ate them and mm-hmm. messed up on them. And it doesn't matter so long as they're always there.
We've got a caller named Ruben who has a recommendation about a resource. Ruben, this is a children book reviews by children?
Yeah, So thanks for having me on the call, Michael. I was listening to the show, fantastic show, great guest, and I was especially taken by the kids making the recommendations. Mm-hmm. And I work for a company called Dogo Books, dogobooks.com, and we're the largest website for kids' book reviews by kids. We're about 60,000 reviews, and it's endless how kids express themselves and pick their favorite reading books. It's a great resource for discovery.
Well, we thank you for that recommendation. It obviously is endless about recommendations for children's books. You see a pile in front of me here, and I'm sorry I can't get to all your excellent recommendations. Thank you for them, and thank you to our guests, Amy Martin from the Oakland Public Library, Lauren Savage from The Reading Bug, and Lewin Pham, who is an author and illustrator of many children's books, including Grace for President and Freckle-Faced Strawberry. And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can go online and see some of these recommendations that have come in, as well as this children's video, kqed.org/forum. Thank you for being with us. I'm going to take a vacation for a couple weeks. So continue listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.